that when we encounter Buddhism, we discover that Buddhism represents really a very comprehensive system of thought. I'm not very satisfied with this word thought, but it's the best that we have for the time being, so let's just make use of it. A comprehensive system of thought. That's what it really is. That's what it essentially is. But when we come into contact with it concretely, when we come into contact with actual Buddhist groups, actual Buddhist individuals, despite the comprehensiveness of Buddhism in principle, what do we find? We find only too often the same sort of piecemeal approach that characterizes the whole of modern knowledge. If one takes, for instance, this question of schools, there are lots of schools in Buddhism, not exactly sects. You've got the Theravada, you've got Zen, Tiantai, Gelugpa, Kagyupa, Mahayana, Vajrayana, and so on. But very often one finds that the followers of one school of Buddhism in the East, even in the West, know very little about the teachings of some, at least, of the other schools. I've had in the East quite a lot of contact with Theravada Buddhists, Theravada Buddhist monks also of Ceylon and Burma and Thailand, and I was rather surprised at first to find that they knew absolutely nothing about Chan or Zen. In the vast number of cases, they just hadn't heard about it at all. And in the same way, if you meet Zen monks, even Zen masters, you'll find that probably they haven't heard about the Theravada, and they know nothing about it at all. And this is the sort of situation by which one is confronted. In the East, the followers of each school know the teachings and traditions of their own school, but usually they know very little at all, if anything, about the teachings and traditions of the other schools to which they belong, to which they do not belong. And this sort of piecemeal approach, we may say, is reflected in a very great deal of the literature available in English on Buddhism. Very often, what professes to be a book on Buddhism is really a book about the teachings of one particular school of Buddhism, the version of Buddhism put forward by one particular school. You very, very rarely indeed get a presentation of the whole field of Buddhist thought, in all its richness, in all its efflorescence. So far as I know, in fact, there are in English only two serious attempts to cover the whole field of Buddhism in a single volume. The first one, of course, is Dr. Edward Conze's Buddhism, Its Essence and Development, which in the course of 250 very succinct and very well-written pages covers practically the whole ground and mentions in some detail all the important schools and all the important teachings. And the other one in English is, of course, my own Survey of Buddhism, which is about twice as long and which goes into even more detail than Dr. Conze himself does. But apart from these two works, one finds that other books on Buddhism don't cover the whole field, but only a part of the field. Either they're about Theravada or about Zen, but Buddhism itself they don't really deal with, not totally, not completely. One finds the same sort of piecemeal approach, even, to the doctrines and practices of Buddhism. Now, very often one gets a very well-written account of one aspect of Buddhist teaching, one particular set of doctrines, but they're not related to other aspects of the teaching, not related to other doctrines. For instance, just to mention an example without going into details, the teaching about dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness of all conditioned existence, is treated usually without reference to another highly relevant doctrine, that is of the Tathagata Garbha, or the seed of potentiality of Buddhahood in all sentient beings. So what one usually has, or what one usually is presented with or confronted by, is a number of teachings, independent, not properly related, all suspended, as it were, in mid-air, without any overall framework, any overall context. One might know all about the Four Truths, the Outward Path, the 12 Links, the 7 Bodhyangas, but how do they all fit together? How do they all add up to a system? How do they all combine into something comprehensive, even universal? Worse even than this, we sometimes find that some doctrines and teachings are truncated in modern times. You're not even given the whole teaching, the whole doctrine. You're given only half of it. And you have to make do as best you can with that. And the most notorious example, the most glaring example of this sort of thing, is the very great teaching, in that the central Buddhist teaching in a way, of what is called a paticca-samutpada, the chain of conditioned co-production or dependent origination. And this is quite literally just cut in half. And in all modern expositions of Buddhism, practically, you're given just half, one half, and not the other half. You're given the negative half, as it were, but you're not given the positive half. You're given the 12 links, which pertain to the round of existence, the wheel of life, which is the wheel of death and rebirth at the same time, but you're not given the 12 links, which pertain to the progressive path of spiritual development. All these teachings are found, of course, in the texts, but in modern expositions, they're not fully presented. Only half the teaching is presented. In this particular case, the lost half was restored from the Pali texts, first of all by that great Pali scholar, Catherine Rhys-Davids, then another great Indian scholar, Dr. Benin Madhubara. He contributed towards it, and then I myself, in my survey, try to round it all off. So this is the sort of thing that one finds, that even when one is given a certain teaching, in most books on Buddhism, only too often one is given only half the teaching, so that one isn't properly able to understand it or to see where it fits in the total system. On the practical side, again, we find that very often people try to practice meditation without some knowledge of the general principles of Buddhism. One can, of course, do this up to a point, provided one restricts oneself to the purely psychological aspect of meditation. But if you want to go into meditation as a religious practice, a religious exercise, a spiritual exercise, then one has to have some understanding, some knowledge of the general spiritual framework or context. In the East, it doesn't matter so much, because there, the whole of life, the whole of society, in a way, is a context for that. And if one has a good teacher, one doesn't need to know very much about the doctrine intellectually. But that sort of situation doesn't pertain here. We're not supported by our environment. So when we want to take up the practice of meditation in a religious sense, it is important that we should have some knowledge at least of the general framework of thought, the general context of teaching within which the practice of meditation takes place. Otherwise, we remain at the level of profane psychology merely.